The work of this church in the world is realized through the generous financial support of all who call this place home. Along with the gifts and time and talent, ours is a shared ministry. You have a role to play here. Church membership is open to all. For more information, go to uusf.org.
I listened this week to an interview of a filmmaker who, as his passionate side hobby that's increasingly getting more and more public attention, has been creating AI short films. And lately, the last few have been ones where he reimagines the lives of Donald Trump and Robert Kennedy and Elon Musk. In one of them, Trump goes on an ayahuasca journey and sees and faces the trauma of his cold mother and his unloving father and is healed and wakes to a vision of a wisdom journey and his life called to be about this, and engages in that journey with all of the intensity that he engaged in all other previous life ventures, studies with every guru in India, reads every book, declaring at the end some version of, they say, I am the greatest shaman ever. The filmmaker, Ari Kushner, says it is healing to see the possibility that these people who are doing damage to this world might wake up to their wrongs and turn things around, be part of the solution. Something about that creative process for him and for others who see these films too feels healing. The opposite of being mired in the nightly news and dystopian TV. Novelist Octavia Butler used her books and the genre of speculative fiction, that is, science fiction, fantasy, dystopian, part utopian, sometimes horror, to force the reader to reckon with all kinds of realities, hoping that doing so in this way might turn the world around. Are there any Octavia Butler readers in the, yeah, she's wonderful. In her 1998 book, Book of the, A Parable of the Talents, she tells, so 1998 book, Parable of the Talents, she tells the story about a now fundamentalist Christian nation whose leader came to power with the slogan, Make America Great Again. I kid you not. A man who reasserts slavery and where people put on virtual reality headsets called dream masks to help them temporarily escape the horror. In that book, she offers the timeless and prophetic warning, quote, choose your leaders with wisdom and forethought. To be led by a coward is to be controlled by that coward's fears. To be led by a fool is to be led by the opportunists who control the fool. To be led by a thief is to offer up your most precious treasures to be stolen. To be led by a liar is to be asked to be lied to. To be led by a tyrant is to sell yourself and those you love into slavery. The arts can be prophetic, imaginations of horrors and hope. Because as Octavia Butler also wrote, there is nothing new under the sun, but there are new suns. Kushner and Butler help people to see those who fall into their orbit, help them to see and hold the failures of one sun while reminding us of the tools we have to imagine new ones. Rear Admiral Grace Hopper, who's also known as Grandma Cobol for being credited with that computer language, at least famously said, the most dangerous phrase in the language is, we've always done it that way. The failure, you might say, of imagination. The power of imagination and its failure shows up everywhere in our lives and our world, doesn't it? Bessel van der Kolk, therapist and author of The Body Keeps Score, a classic book on trauma and healing, writes, "Imagination is absolutely critical to the quality of our lives. Without imagination, there is no hope, no chance to envision a better future, no place to go, no goal to reach." In the book, Authentic Selves, that I grounded us in last week in the service, interviews of people who are trans and non-binary and their families and friends, one older Black man, whose name I owe you, and I'm gonna make sure we have in our YouTube notes for this service. I took a picture of the wrong page, which didn't have his name on it. Spoke in the interview about this article that he found, like a rare needle in a mainstream cultural haystacks of his time. An article he found about an artist, a jazz musician and band leader, Billy Tipton, who lived for years, his whole life, undetected and trans. The man who told this story ripped the article, he said, out of the magazine like a pornographic centerfold, he joked, and he hid it under his mattress at home. And each day when he came home from school in middle school, he'd get it out and he'd reread it. To be able to imagine a person somewhere, even just one who was like him, who was flourishing or had and was happy in their life, is what kept his spirit and the dreams he could have for life on the other side alive against what he experienced every day. Imagination. It's this thing that powerfully pulls us through so much. The imagination of a career or a job can pull us through all the difficult training and preparation we might have to do. The imagination of a healthy baby can pull us through the pains of labor or the complications of an adoption. The imagination of a healthy, maybe cut and sexy body, maybe, pulls us through burpees and push-ups. Can I get an amen? Yeah. The imagination of a lifelong relationship and connection can pull us through everything from bad first dates, a whole lot of them, to rough patches in a friendship or a marriage. When the intrinsic good of something is not quite enough, the intrinsic joy and satisfaction is lacking in that moment. We need imagination, right, to pull us through to the other side. Similarly, failures of imagination show up in intimate and collective failures. Beatrice Boutreau, in the book Radical Optimism, writes this about an intimate failure of imagination that can show up for us. She writes, "Our problems with unhappiness are rooted in the imagination. For instance, we can interpret someone's accidental sharp tone of voice as an unfriendly reaction to ourselves. Begin to give that person life in our imagination as someone who doesn't like us, and therefore be on the lookout for subsequent evidence of hostility. Show distrust and unfriendliness in turn, which naturally has the effect on the other person. And so by building this thing up in our imaginations, we can develop this whole atmosphere and relationship of hostility that may be completely false and unnecessary because it all began from something quite accidental. Similarly, by persistently thinking well of persons, we will behave in a naturally friendly way to them and elicit friendly responses. I'd never thought of that as a pattern, but she's right. It is a failure of imagination, right? When we do that thing that I know I do, I'm sure all of us, and we've all experienced it too, of telling ourselves or having someone clearly have told themselves a story about us, right? Without checking in with them, without starting with wonder and curiosity. George Miller, who passed away this year, a member here who we're going to hear more about in a couple of weeks, he wore these t-shirts with sayings. You'll hear more about these. But one of the ones he wore had a message that was some version of, be wrong assuming the best. In other words, if you're going to be wrong in the right direction. So imagination can play this intimate, relational role in our life that's powerful and even transformative. Max Haven, who's the research chair in culture, media, and social justice at Lake Hood University in Canada, is a huge believer in imagination as a radical tool for systemic change. In his book, titled Crises of Imagination, Crises of Power, he writes about imagination and its failures as it shows up meta in our political systems. He writes in one portion, capitalism, and I would say he's describing virulent capitalism, relies on conscripting our imaginations. It relies on each of us imagining ourselves as essentially isolated, lonely, competitive economic agents. It relies on us imagining that the system is the natural expression of human nature, or that it's too powerful to be changed, or that no other system could ever be desirable. Interesting, right? So much is what we imagined into being or cannot imagine beyond. And true, too, that those who have changed the world have started with imagination, seeing new suns, as Butler talked about. For example, on May 17, 1954, what happened? 76 years ago, the Brown v. Board of Education ruling was handed down. Which is to say, Oliver Brown, whose daughter was denied admission to a segregated Topeka school, joined with Thurgood Marshall and the NAACP to push forward their imagined world where schools were integrated in Kansas. They built from their strategic imaginations a case. Even the famous Dolls study that was part of that case that showed the effects of segregation on African American children was the creative work of psychologists Kenneth and Mamie Clark to test a hypothesis that explained what otherwise looked like a fixed reality or might, and find an imaginative and compelling way to test their hypothesis with children. Not accidentally, too, the Clarks were people to do this imagining. Two people who had personally imagined futures for themselves that were not reflected in the realities they were born into. Kenneth Clark, the first African American to earn a PhD in psychology at Columbia, to hold permanent professorship at the college, City College of New York, and serve as the president of the American Psychological Association. And his wife, Mamie Clark, the first African-American woman and second African-American after Kenneth Clark to receive a doctorate in psychology from Columbia. Imagination. that when it isn't working can keep a nation mired in a broken system. But when it is this superpower for personal growth and resilience and persistence and transformation of all we see and touch, from the intimate to the collective. So how do we trap and keep hope alive by keeping imagination alive? Well, I think we should talk about it at coffee hour, because I'm sure you all have your strategies, things that work for you, intentional or that you've stumbled into. I mean, I think part of the answer is that we give ourselves permission to go to that place when we're not raised in it, when we watch Mr. Rogers and Sesame Street and are invited into those places as part of what it means to be in our lives. To see for it and care for imagination as not child's play or child's play, but that's okay. To spin possibilities and let ourselves daydream. To doodle alternative landscapes in our notebooks when someone's droning on. To read fiction and get lost in fantasy. To immerse in the work of other creatives, whether they're visual artists or slam poets or musicians or choreographers or cultural creatives who are writing from their laboratories and academia or their offices, asking us to imagine with them other political or economic or social systems, to say not ever that anything is impossible or silly, but first ask, can you say more about what that would look like? Elizabeth Gilbert, who is the author of Eat, Pray, Love, and also a book called Big Magic that's about creativity that I love, on this point she says, what you produce is not always sacred. What is sacred is the time you spend working on the project and what that time does to expand your imagination. And what that expanded imagination does to transform your life. So let go of the results she's asking, or result-oriented thinking, or judging, and just surrender to the engagement. Emily Fletcher, in the book that some of us read in the minister's book group called Stress Less and Accomplish More, she writes about the power of meditation to open up and strengthen the connections between our right and left brains, the analytical part and the creative problem-solving intuitive part, so that both are ready and available in our problem-solving in our lives. Often, when we let ourselves re-engage with creative ventures, you and I will also find that we are more often sent into places of the greatest creativity and productivity, where we also find the greatest satisfaction in the way we are in the world. Those times that Mihai Csikszentmihalyi describes as times of flow. So if we want imagination, we can follow the artist's way. There's lots of opportunities to go on outings with ourselves, artists' dates, as she describes them, or pick up a creative practice that we used to love, but we set behind. Do creative baking, fantasy gaming. Allison Jacks, minister emerita, soon to be, I hope, of this congregation, said she's part of a group that makes artistic postcards to send people in power, meaning they all sit around and cut pictures out of old magazines and turn them into collages with creative messages. A challenge for everyone who receives them to think outside the box, to wake up to the call to create a future that is beyond the broken places that they've come to accept as normative. You can keep a dream journal, or what comes to you when your rational management brain is off duty. You can take the simple advice of Robert Bly in his poem, Things to Think. Think in ways you've never thought before if the phone rings. Think of it as carrying a message larger than anything you've heard, vaster than 100 lines of Yeats. Whatever we do, may we cultivate the ways that invite us to think beyond the lines that say stop, drawn by someone else sometimes and sometimes by ourselves. Twist those lines into balloons to give children, as the poem that was our prayer this morning asked us to. Let us write the story of the person's actions that give them grace and risk being wrong with the most kind of generous imagination we can offer to them. Tuck under our pillows the stories and imagined futures, a size too big for us right now, that draw us forward, and take them out when we're in danger of forgetting them to read them again. There may not be anything new under the sun, but as Octavia Butler wrote, there are new suns, as many, it turns out, as we can imagine, and a sky wide enough to plant them all in, to light up all the dark and cold places we know and find. What do you imagine? When no one is looking, what lines do you want to step over or mold into possibility? What story do you want to tell yourself about your own sweet life or ours? Let's keep doing all that and see what happens, shall we? There's reasons the sages talk of moral imagination. Imagination is not accidentally planted in us all. Amen.
Go down, Moses, way down in Egypt's land, and tell old Pharaoh, let my people go. This classic slave spiritual doubled as a secret instruction manual. Melody and biblical language masked directions about meeting points, timing, and geography of escape along the Underground Railroad. Harriet Tubman reportedly changed the verse that she would sing when conditions were unsafe. These sorrow songs also forged collective hope in a critique of the slaveholder order through their subversive creativity. Lyrically, the song refers to the liberation of ancient Jewish people from Egyptian slavery. That story held a second meaning for enslaved Africans, though, because they related their experience under slavery to those of Moses and the Israelites who were enslaved by the Pharaoh, and the idea that the goddess would come to their aid, the aid of the persecuted, really resonated with them. So Go Down Moses also makes reference to the Jordan River, which was commonly associated in spirituals with reaching freedom, because the act of running away often involved crossing one or more rivers. There's something mysterious about creativity and how sometimes it emerges out of suffering and systemic oppression. Those forced into slavery also creatively used hair braiding as a tool to map out freedom routes along the Underground Railroad. Stories are also told of how quilting patterns were used as secret guides for other enslaved peoples to find freedom routes. As history unfolded, black music continued to be a leading voice in creative new styles matched with revolutionary lyrics demanding unjust systems be taken apart for living and vibrant alternatives. From these slave spirituals emerged the blues, jazz, it evolved into rock and roll and then underground house music, which is still the popular music of nightlife today. In many ways, black women and black queer people, those experiencing multiple intersecting oppressions, have been on the front lines of creative expression. Music has also been a way that the labor movement has demanded fairer wages and has riled up class consciousness among other workers. Joe Hill and Utah Phillips were early 20th century protest labor song leaders who would rewrite old Christian hymns into resistance music. You see, in those days, a lot of working people went to the churches that their bosses also went to. And so they knew all the hymns, their bosses' hymns, really. But if you remove all that religious language and keep the beauty of the hymn, you get "What a Friend We Have in Jesus" turned into "Dump the Bosses Off Your Back." Today, we're seeing music once again take center stage in the resistance of genocide in Gaza. Emerging out of the 1990s, but currently taking on new strength, Palestinian hip-hop has been a tool of collective liberation and a space to hold immense grief. We're also seeing a huge increase in poetry coming out of Palestine. Amidst one of the most terrifying genocides to ever take place, there's this burst of creativity. In our own city, you can go to the Coit Tower and see Diego Rivera's art. It pictures indigenous history and class struggle and anti-imperialist message sent to the workers. Drag queens and drag kings have long resisted gender norms, but recent actions like defending Drag Story Hour turn glitter, wigs, and heels into explicit creative counter-oppressive resistance. A few years back, those simple pink knitted hats we all wore in the streets, handmade by many of you in this congregation, was a feminist cry against Trump's misogyny. The mass of thousands in DC and across the country wearing them turned craft into a collective visual rebuke. In our own congregation, we've used art and creativity as expressions of resistance as well. Our Writers Against Fascism group has done, and the New Church podcast are two great examples. Beyond the more obvious art display in our two larger rooms down, which is constantly having new displays of arts that is always a little edgy and fun. In all of these ways, and so many more, creativity is key to my spirituality as a Unitarian Universalist, especially in trying to bring joy and resilience to places of suffering and oppression. Blessed be.